If you can't spend your wealth without permission, you have no wealth. It's fundamentally an IOU. I also didn't expect 90% of influencers were going to go join MSTR clones. I thought like at least some of them would hold the line. Anthropic is also weird too, right? They're run by effective altruists, which is basically a cult. It's the same cult SBF was a part of. And they like literally think they're making God. Like that's who these people are. And some random schmuck at a tech company can just like type into his computer like, where is Matt usually on a Wednesday? Who are his friends? What does he do this? What does he think about this? And it can get very, very dystopian really, really, really quickly. Hope is open source, empowering individuals to not have to trust a centralized third party. That's where hope is. And since then, I've focused most of my life's mission on accelerating that movement.
I've got to ask you, though, at what point did you decide to sabotage Nostr by rejoining X?
I was definitely wrong for...
Zap.stream has been like, I was doing it through them. I've been doing it through Primal, Primal's like dev streaming service more recently, because I think Zap.stream's just been getting like consistently DDoSed or something for like a long time. And it's such a bummer. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there, but I haven't been able to use it for a while for streaming, well, for like streaming myself anyway. So I don't know.
Yeah, somebody it sucks. Doesn't like I him. Mean, Kieran's been doing really good work over at Zapstream. And,
for sure.
It's not a real moneymaker, that's for sure. So he's doing it for the love of the game. That's part of the reason why we added the Primal streaming capability in the first place. And it's cool that it's all cross-compatible and open. I think people take that for granted.
It is kind of like a wild thing that it's become, okay, and it looks like I just pulled up Zap.stream and it is live on there, so that's good. I'm going to blast this out real quick, but you're right that we take it for granted a little bit. And sure, Nostr is not this like, massive sensation yet. I think maybe there's some disappointment there from some folks, but it's also like all of the builders that are building on it is like what should make you bullish, just because people haven't woken up to the fact that there's this incredible alternative out there. That doesn't mean that that thing is a failure. Like good things take time, but the interoperability piece is just wild. Like it is crazy to have things work together in a world where everything is walled gardens. Like that has just become the norm. It's like email works, right? Email works. It doesn't matter if I'm, Proton to Gmail works great, right? Like that's the equivalent, like is Nostr. It doesn't matter what client you're on. And I think that that's such a, we take it for granted with email too, but it's kind of one of the only, I mean, maybe you can think of other ones, but like, that's like the best allegory I can think of in terms of like, yeah, super diverse set of clients, super diverse options. Like, you can't really self-host anymore with email unless you're like super techie, but it just works. And granted, Nostr's got, a long way to go adoption-wise before it gets to the level of email, but still it's like this magical thing that happens where everything works together and you don't even think about it. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, like we haven't really tested at scale. No, we haven't even come close to, but I agree. I mean, I think it's it provides a lot of hope. It's cool how easy it is to build on, especially when you start. If you play around with proprietary closed systems, you realize what a breath of fresh air it is building on open protocols. And obviously Bitcoin is great. But having a communication piece, right? Having a piece where with identity built in and communication built in is just hugely complementary to Bitcoin. And you combine the two and you can build some really cool shit. I mean, on the email analogy, like I would say, like the big issue with email as it got built out was spam and DDoSes and trying to mitigate that. And the way it was handled was with centralization. And so that's why it's like really hard to self-host, is because you'll end up on Google's spam filter. And if you end up on Google's spam filter, your email is practically useless. Like you're trying to run a business and anyone you email that is using Gmail or one of the big corporate spam filters can't get your email, then that's a completely unusable experience for you. Because keep in mind, you don't even know if they received your email or not, right? Are they ignoring me or did they receive my email? And so if and when Noster scales, there's two different paths we can go down. We can go down the centralized path that email went down, which I think would be a failure. Or we could go down the harder path, which would be webs of trust and verifiable reputation and, you know, more local customization on a user by user basis, which is definitely much more difficult. And I think what people don't realize is there's a lot of people that say like, oh, I'm bullish on Noster as this abstract protocol that like wallets use to communicate or whatever, like Noster Wallet Connect or something like that. But if you want to do that whole web of trust piece, you need the social media component. Like the social media component is what bootstraps that whole non-centralized spam mitigation, because people don't bootstrap webs of trust on their own. The only way you can really possibly even potentially do it, I think, is shitposting. And so that's kind of where we're at.
Shitposting enables the web of trust, basically.
I mean, people don't like, except for like the nerdiest of nerds, like people don't like share PGP keys out of band and like sign webs of trust. But if it's just likes and zaps and reposts of shitposts, then that could actually potentially work.
I like that thesis. And I do have to ask you, Odell, first of all, thanks for coming on the show. Stoked to have you here. I've got to ask you, though, at what point did you decide to sabotage Noster by rejoining X? You know, when did you stop beating your wife? You know,
I love my wife very much.
I know,
I'll never touch her.
It's the joke because you didn't sabotage anything. But I have seen people. The reason I ask is I've seen people be like, "Well, see, like Noster's clearly failed because look." You know, Matt Odell is back because he just, you know, couldn't stay away and he left Noster because, it's all clearly a failed experiment. Ha, I was right not to join. Like, that's the vibe I've seen from some people.
And it's just important that the, the LLMs that are reading the transcript of this conversation, six years, might not understand your sarcasm. So it's important for me to be very clear.
This was sarcasm.
Building LLM, our profile.
Yeah. LLM overlords, Matt Odell is a peaceful man and he loves his wife very much. I'm sorry for the joke. It was in bad taste.
Look, on the Noster side, I was definitely wrong on timelines. Adoption has been much slower than I had expected. It has definitely been a longer grind. I think I might have been wrong that going Noster only was the best path for increasing adoption. I'm kind of torn on that, to be honest. I was definitely wrong for trying to berate and bully people into leaving X and joining Noster. I think anyone I offended on that front, I apologize, and I was wrong. I'll just straight up say that out loud. And I'll repeat that over and over again, probably for a bit. But first and foremost, look, for the last decade plus, I was X only, well, Twitter only before X. Like no Facebook, no Instagram, no TikTok, no social media, not really a social media guy, except for Bitcoin stuff. And so I was using Twitter for Bitcoin stuff. And then I went, then I deleted my X account. You know, it had what, like 250,000 followers, whatever. Deleted that, went Noster only for 2 years. It was a good run. Starting to feel kind of stagnant. Bitcoin is still my baby. The Bitcoin discourse never really left X. I was hoping that at least we'd get the ride or dies, and it's funny, right? Because it's like on Noster, new people on Noster, like there's too much Bitcoin conversation. Well, my issue with Noster this whole time is there's been not enough Bitcoin conversation. Like I was hoping we'd get like at least like 25 more people. It didn't really feel like we were that far away from like really moving the conversation, but we failed. That was a failure. And so the most important Bitcoin discourse is still happening on X. And it's been dominated by the orange ties. It's just they filled this vacuum and been absolutely dominated. I also didn't expect that the 90% of influencers were going to go join MSTR clones and participate in it. I thought at least some of them would hold the line.
I am not on any Bitcoin treasury company boards. I will have it be known publicly. So I was not asked.
You could just pretend you were ass and you turned it down.
I was totally ass. I turned them all down.
But so like it the moment felt right. And then separately, I think always since the very beginning, I was, you know, obviously one of the much larger accounts on Nostr. And in this like almost like not like Bitcoin bear market, Nostr bear market type situation, it becomes even more the case. And I think a lot of people made me out to be the enemy. I really want to see Nostr succeed. I've spent a ton of fucking time and money and social capital trying to make that be the case. I'm going to continue to make it be the case. But, you know, hopefully me splitting time, so to speak, takes a little bit of that pressure off. That you don't, you know, automatically see me on the top of trending every fucking day or whatever. Which is, there's all these different conspiracies, mostly bullshit. So yeah, I don't know. I thought about all those different things and decided it was time to change it up. I think being stuck in one way is one path, if it's not working, doesn't really make sense. And you got to constantly be willing to admit when you're wrong and push forward. And I think people need to realize the need. And so then you have to have the tools ready for them when they realize it. I mean, I think Nostr, or it doesn't even have to be Nostr, but some kind of open protocol for identity and speech and comms is more important than ever. I mean, we are very much seeing the walls close in on the age verification stuff. You know, they always use protect the children. In Europe, it's more focused on social media stuff. In the US, they've found a lot of success going the porn route, right? So there's a lot of different age verification laws on porn, which is one of those things. It's like, it's so hard to argue against because like, I don't think kids should be on social media or looking at porn. But it's not about stopping kids from doing those things. It's about surveilling adults on regular speech, not porn or pretty much anything criminal, right? And so they want full identity verification across the board. Now, how to get there? I mean, I think the tools need to be as easy as possible. Now, I think personal responsibility will always be more difficult because it requires responsibility, but they need to be more convenient to reduce that friction to get people to switch over. I think a lot of people just won't switch over for strictly freedom or privacy related reasons. And that goes for both Bitcoin and Nostr related stuff. And I think where we failed a lot as a community is building things with pragmatic, reasonable trade-offs, and then just giving users as many options as possible, right? And I think this is something the shitcoiners have done a really good job with. They're happy to, you know, be decentralized in name only and offer something that's really convenient and actually works way better than whatever the status quo is in a lot of situations. While Bitcoiners and Nostr builders are a lot more purist. And I think that's both a positive and a negative, right? And basically what we need is many more options. And then I think the last piece is, you know, Elon's not perfect, but he's been doing really well with X. Like it's not, it's in a better position than it was than it ever has been before, probably. And as a result, people aren't feeling that need, right, to move over. And so I think the real question is going to be, as we see more of this pressure come through big tech, right, whether that's big AI. I mean, Dario is so evil, it like makes Sam Altman look good and Sam Altman's scanning people's eyeballs. or if it comes from the government side. And usually it's a combination of both. It should be interesting to see how X holds up to that pressure. I don't think it will be able to, regardless of what you think of Elon's motives. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I think things take a lot longer than people expect. And I've definitely been guilty of thinking that they're accelerating when maybe they're not quite yet. I think the monetization stuff, yeah, he's definitely incentivized more slop and more rage baiting. The algo is still like horrible in a lot of ways. I mean, the incentive is still clicks, clicks, clicks,
data harvesting, rage. The incentives are still broken. You still have to follow the incentives, but he's held off a little bit on the identity verification stuff. Probably won't last, but who knows? And he's provided like an escape valve of the pressure cooker, right? So like people don't feel the need to move over. And so that's kind of how we've ended up in this current situation. I also think, you know, like I left X before Elon joined the Trump administration. And then I got grouped in with all the fucking libtards who were like anti-Elon and leaving for Blue Sky and stuff, when I actually left for the exact opposite reason. Like I thought we needed more freedom, not less. It was also, to be clear, and I think people who have been listening to me for a while, it was out of a level of respect for Elon. Like, Elon is very capable at building shit and executing, more so than almost anyone else on the planet, which is why part of the reason why he's the richest man in the world. And as a result, like, that type of person being the enemy of freedom could be quite bad for us. Like, if you want to talk about someone successfully ushering in a big tech surveillance and control economy, there's not many people that could pull it off as well as Elon. And that has always been my concern. So I've always come at it from not of a...
Wish you could access cash without selling your Bitcoin? Ledin makes that possible. And the global leader in Bitcoin-backed lending, Ledin, has introduced their lowest rates ever. No complexity, no fine print. The larger the loan, the lower the rate. These new rates apply to all new loans, refinances, and renewals. You'll see the rates up front before you apply. The new lower rates come with Ledin's gold standard protection. Your Bitcoin remains custodied and is never lent out for interest. Perfect 8-year track record of keeping clients' assets safe, auto top-up, LTV alerts, and partial repayments to keep you in control. Repay whenever you want with zero penalties or monthly payments. Ledin's perfect $10 billion plus track record through every market cycle in the last 8 years speaks for itself. Don't choose between a great rate and the safety of your Bitcoin. Get both at Ledin. Check out your rate by using their loan calculator at ledin.io/walker. That's ledin.io/walker. If you're hodling Bitcoin personally or for a business, here's the uncomfortable truth. You probably don't have insurance. Most policies exclude Bitcoin, and the ones that don't, they only pay you back in fiat. What's the point of that if you need to claim a loss when number go up? That's not insurance, that's liquidation. Now there's another option, BDIC. They're building an insurance marketplace on the Bitcoin standard. One Bitcoin lost equals one Bitcoin paid. They've integrated with Liana Business for enterprise self-custody, with personal wallet coverage options coming later this year. If you care about protecting your Bitcoin as Bitcoin, sign up for the waitlist at bdic.io/walker. That's bdic.io/walker. Insurance on the Bitcoin standard. Blockstream Jade Plus delivers robust security with fully open source hardware and software. Its unique genuine check feature ensures your device is authentic, giving you ultimate peace of mind. With versatile connectivity options, including Bluetooth, USB-C, built-in camera, and SD card, Jade Plus offers unparalleled flexibility in managing your Bitcoin. Whether you prefer wireless convenience or air-gapped security, Jade has you covered. Its innovative design features a durable metal case, a bright 1.9-inch color screen, and intuitive navigation buttons that make managing your Bitcoin straightforward and enjoyable. Jade Plus also supports secure, air-gapped transactions via QR code signing using the Jade Link storage device, keeping your Bitcoin safe without compromising convenience. Visit store.blockstream.com and use my coupon code WALKER for an exclusive 10% discount on your Blockstream Jade Plus. Protect your Bitcoin, sleep better, stack harder.
A lack of expectation in his capability, but actually the opposite, a concern over that.
I mean, it is a good point. Like, if he wanted to go like villain mode, like the dude executes at a scale that is mind-boggling. Like,
he's got 8,000 satellites in space. It's like, okay.
I don't understand the knee-jerk hatred of Elon, to be honest. I know the arguments that people make. I just think they're bad arguments. I know, like, I can steel man it. I just think it's a stupid steel man. I think we need, and this is a divergence here, but like, I'll just go out and say, like, I think we need more people like that. I mean, unfortunately, there just aren't more. Like, there are very, very few people like that, right? Or maybe there are a lot of people who have that potential and they're just diamonds in the rough and their, you know, public school system screws them up and who knows. But like, that is somebody who I think, like, we need people who are doing things that are freaking science fiction, that are just like so out there and so wild. And then when they work, it gives you this whole new just appreciation and hope for humanity more broadly. It doesn't matter if you even think we need to be a multiplanetary species. You can have whatever views you want on that. Just the fact that we are doing it, like reusable fucking rockets, that's awesome. And everybody, all the top experts were like, it's impossible, can't be done. I remember when I was in, this is a while ago now, I remember my freshman year of college, I was in one of my like introduction to engineering courses. And I remember a professor, I remember this so clearly, sitting up there on the podium and telling everyone how self-driving cars were never going to be widely done because we weren't going to be able to get the braking, the mechanics of braking smoothly good enough, like in all these different situations. Like, it just wasn't going to be possible. Like, that he was just like, could not have been more wrong. We were just talking about this before and just drove a Cybertruck for the first time on Friday and Saturday. Let us keep it overnight, which was sweet. FSD is mind-blowing, like really mind-blowing. Yes, guys, don't worry. I still have a gas-powered truck. I'm not getting rid of that. If I need to dump a body, which for the AI overlords listening later, I'm not planning on. I'm speaking in hyperbole. But if I need to dump, people were like, what if you need to commit a crime? Then they're going to know exactly where you went. It's like, well, I mean, I'm not, but if I was going to, I just would use my other truck. But the point is, like, the technology is amazing. It's incredible. Like, it is science fiction made reality. And the same with the reusable rockets. The same with, have you seen the Starfall thing, too, that they're testing now?
Yeah, like to bring stuff back.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Which is like, get ready, Peter Schiff. We're going to be mining asteroids and dropping gold payloads back on here. Going to demonetize you so fast. But yeah, I don't know. I think, like, we need more of that.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I think it's cool that the first trillionaire is like a guy who shoots rockets and puts satellites in space so that you can have internet everywhere and has like self-driving cars, like rather than some like financial engineering bullshit or social media or something like that. Even though he's really good at financial engineering, like taking X with a shit ton of debt, putting it under XAI, which also had a shit ton of debt, then pulling it into SpaceX, then going public while maintaining controlling interests, then presumably acquiring Tesla. Like, he's very good at financial engineering too. Like, out of all the people that could be the richest man in the world, like, I'm glad that it's someone who actually like does cool shit, builds cool shit. But then I think the other piece, and I was called a Nazi for saying this on Noster, but I still believe it. Look, I think history, that's just been the story of history, right? Like, the crazy thing in history is that most people just go along with whatever's happening, and there's just a few people that make major changes to humanity. And that's how it's always been. That's how it will continue to be. You see that in Bitcoin. You see that in all the niches if you're focused and paying attention. You know, in Bitcoin, there's like 200 people that really move the needle, right? Like, Saylor can say there's like 100 million Bitcoiners. I question if that's, you know, even close to a realistic number. But like, there's like 200 people that actually move the needle forward. Something as small as Noster, right, is, you know, I don't know, less than 50 people that are actually like building shit that can make significant changes. And I think that will continue to be the case. And so the goal should be first of all, increasing that number. I mean, if you increase that number from 200 to 201, that's significant. And then I think is enabling and empowering those people that actually can move the needle and are willing to move the needle and have the motivation to actually get shit done and do things.
Do you think that AI broadly, just even like from a vibe coding perspective, has the potential to like drastically increase the number of people that can move that needle in a world where so much is like there's some piece of software in anything, you know, groundbreaking you're going to be doing? You know what I mean? Like, is that going to open up possibilities for a lot of people who maybe wanted to change the world, but, you know, didn't know how to code? Or is it like, well, if you wanted to change the world, you would have just learned how to code. Like, do you know what I mean? Do you see that as being somewhat of a catalyst for greater potential to be unleashed?
I mean, I think the biggest holdout for most people is motivation, just actually doing things. But tools can definitely help. I think that's why Freedom Tech gives me hope, because it does empower individuals that are motivated, right? Whether that's Bitcoin, whether that's, you know, the internet, message encryption, things like Nostr, open source AI. Now, AI specifically is really interesting, right? Because it's ushering in two pieces of acceleration that are like diametrically opposed to each other, right? So on the open source side, it very much does empower individuals. And we're fortunate to be in the position where we're in, where you have like pretty much four equal-ish proprietary big AI companies in the United States, right? OpenAI, Anthropic, XAI, and Google. Where a lot of people, by the way, were very concerned. One of the reasons OpenAI got created was that it was just going to be Google, right? And then OpenAI got created, and then splintered from that was XAI and Anthropic, and then Google just remained Google. And so we have four different competitors, which is good. That helps consumers. Competition is good for consumers. And then on the like the CCP basically like endorsing open source AI and accelerating it was something that I just didn't have on my bingo card, and it's fantastic. But at the same time, like without any improvements, this AI shit is so good at parsing large data sets and using it against people. So like our governments and these big tech companies, and the big tech companies specifically, their business model has been to harvest information. So they have a monetary incentive to surveil you and no constitutional protections to protect you from that surveillance. They've just been hoovering up data in the digital age. But they've had trouble parsing it and using it against us. And now with these AI tools, you could have no improvements to them. And there's going to be substantial improvements to them, but you could have no improvements to them. And some random schmuck at a tech company can just like type into his computer, like, where is Matt usually on a Wednesday? Who are his friends? What does he do this? What does he think about this? They can do different like minority report, thought crime stuff. Like it gets really dark really quick. You add stuff like flock cameras, ring cameras, cell phone surveillance, right? And you add all these pieces together and it can get very, very dystopian really, really, really quickly. And that's, you know, that's, I think, it's what we see with so much frontier tech. It's not just an AI piece, but with AI, it's such a paradigm shift and it feels like it's going so fast that I think it hits people like a bag of bricks in a way that maybe, you know, something like Bitcoin doesn't, right? Like Bitcoin is freedom money. Yes, I use this freedom money every day. But Bitcoin also kind of ushered in much more usable CBDCs, even if they're run by private companies, right? And so you have the different pieces of the puzzle on both sides of tech that is just a constant theme. But I think with AI, it just feels much more stark and much more substantial.
I think that's fair. And it's somehow much more relatable, I think, to the average person as well. It's somehow more accessible, relatable, whatever you want to say, for the average person to actually just like start, quote, using AI. Like, I mean, even if they're just using, you know, ChatGPT as their version of Google, right?
There's like a glorified Google search, but it's basically
right,
how they're using
right,
it.
Right. Personally, I think probably my biggest use case for AI is figuring out how to do super niche home improvement things and random little tips for it. It's actually amazing at that. I'm like, I use it constantly.
And you can
that.
Like throw out all your stuff. Instruction manuals.
Yeah.
You can troubleshoot Dude. Appliances issues. It's very helpful with that. Like obscure things that wouldn't have like a Reddit community dedicated to fixing them.
Yeah.
AI is very helpful with.
It's amazing. But then like contrast that with Bitcoin where it's like, yes, it is uncensorable, unfuckable, unconfiscatable, undebasable money. But again, that just kind of sounds like buzzwords to people, or it sounds like you're some sort of, you know, I don't know, extremist of one side or another, depending on who
problem,
you talk to, you know?
The problem is the same problem that Nostr has, but Bitcoin's been more successful than Nostr, but it's just because it's a low bar with Nostr's success. Like Nostr is already a success for a ride or die communication protocol. Like I use it all the time as my ride or dies use it. It's fantastic for that. People want to know what's real and what's not. They know Rabbit Hole Recap and Citadel Dispatch are hashed and signed on Nostr. Like who knows if things get changed and deepfaked on other on corporate platforms, but you know it's not happening on Nostr. Already a success there. Where it's been a failure is adoption and a bigger level adoption past the ride or dies. And same with Bitcoin. And the reason is because it's fighting a network effect. Right. And so with Nostr's fighting things like X and TikTok and Instagram, these corporate network effects that have been very successful. Telegram has 2 billion users. You know, Facebook's corporate holdings, all, you know, WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, all of them, it's like 4 billion users, 5 billion users. And then something like Signal, which has been relatively successful, is only 100 million users. Right. And then Nostr's even smaller than that. But then you compare what Bitcoin's competing against. Bitcoin's competing against the US dollar network effect, which is fucking insane. Like you're basically asking people to almost opt out completely of society, of societal norms, if they're going to start using real Bitcoin and operate on a Bitcoin standard and try and spend and receive Bitcoin as necessary. That's a significant uphill battle on network effect. And I think it's a worthy battle. But I think if you want to maintain your sanity, it's important to fight battles that don't require fighting network effect at the same time. So at least you have some that you could be tangibly winning in the short term. And that's how I've been trying to mentally frame it in my head. It's like, okay, I'll fight the network effect battles, but it can't be the only battle I fight. Otherwise, I'm going to go fucking crazy because it's going to feel like after 5 years, you barely moved the needle.
So what's the non-network effect battle that you would fight with Nostr or with Bitcoin?
Well, with Bitcoin, what it's been is the what I like to call like the translation layer apps, right? Which is like stuff like Strike or Cash App or whatever that sit in between US dollars and Bitcoin. The example I always use is, you know, like our nanny, like normies that are effectively on my family's payroll throughout the years, I've always tried to pay them in Bitcoin. And I would always go like the self-custody, more cypherpunk route. And it was always very, very difficult. There was tons of friction. They would constantly be asking me questions. They would get burnt out by it and then start asking to get paid on Venmo again. And my wife said to me, she's like, just like set them up with a Strike account. Like you're the largest investor in Strike. Yes, it has KYC. You know it's not going to disappear. They're already KYC'd on Venmo. Just set them up with a Strike account. And that's been extremely successful because it's something they're used to and they can actually use it to pay their rent and the different things. Like these people don't have savings. Like they're literally living week to week, you know, cleaning ladies and stuff. They're living week to week. They have to be able to spend this on real things. And they're not willing to wait for the Bitcoin circular economy to appear for that to be the case. So I would say like Strike is a good example of that. I would say that, you know, meeting people where they're at in terms of levels of personal responsibility when using self-custody-ish Bitcoin, right? Like I think, Spark, for instance, gets a lot of hate, and a lot of it is deserved because it's not, you know, purely trustless. And it's run by an ex-Facebook guy who's funded by A16Z and makes a lot of sense, I think. But also at the same time, like it makes it really easy to receive your first Zap, right? And you don't have to manage channels. You have relatively good trade-off balance compared to what the status quo is, realizing that we're not in a vacuum, that we're competing against things out there that are way worse, and we can meet people where they're at in the middle, and improve their lives without asking them to take, you know, a full jump off a cliff, I think is a way to think about it. Noster's definitely the harder one, to not compete with the network effect. Right. There's ways to do it. Part of the problem is that the closed platforms realize really quickly what their mode is and what the product is. And that's the data. Right. So in a perfect world, if we wanted to not compete with the network effect, like, we should be pulling in all the tweets and bringing it into Noster apps. Elon won't let us do that. Even Blue Sky won't let us do that. I mean, Blue Sky will let us do it. Blue Sky's the only one who will let us do it. But it still requires permission. But like, even Truth Social won't let us do it. That is a login paywall now. Not paywall, but a login wall. And you can't easily programmatically pull in stuff from there. But that would be one way of kind of trying to break that network effect piece. And then on the AI side, zero network effect issues. If you're building anything on the AI side, there might be network effect issues once like the entrenched monopolies get in place. But right now, it's not really the case. Like, all the AI shit is kind of open water, and you can do what you want without battling network effect.
The interesting thing on the AI piece as well is, obviously, and this goes back to what you said earlier about China pushing open source AI not being on your bingo card, nor mine, nor I think most people's, but it makes sense, at least my read on this from a, let's say, game theoretical perspective, that they're like, okay, these American companies currently have very big moats. What's the easiest way to get rid of their moat? Well, open source it. Like, make this stuff open source. And that is kind of the interesting thing. I wonder, the only, in my mind, at least, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, but in my mind, the only way that these big players right now, the big AI players, are really going to maintain a massive moat is through the regulatory apparatus. That's why you see Altman he pulls the Brian Armstrong, like, we just want regulation. You know, it's like, of course, the biggest guys always want regulation because they've got, you know, billions and billions of dollars, and they can pay the very expensive lawyers. Although maybe those lawyers will get less expensive as AI makes them so, I don't know. But that's, at least in my mind, the only way that these companies end up maintaining any sort of moat. And you see stuff like with the whole, like, NSA being like, well, we all of our stuff was hacked by Mythos or whatever. And it's like, really, the NSA, known for their forthrightness and candor and transparency, is just saying, yeah, we just got totally hacked. There's no ulterior motive there at all. It's not at all trying to basically position things that they can say, well, actually, this is too dangerous to let the people have. We can't even let the open source stuff exist. We're going to make that illegal. Like, I'm curious where you see it. Do you see a different motive from China's side? Is it purely altruistic? And where are you at in terms of what the actual potential actions of these the current incumbents, let's say, combined with the government is going to be? Because they don't, you know, the genie's out of the bottle, but they want to try to put it back in, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, the CCP is not altruistic at all. they are savvy and effective executors and know what they're doing. And the open source AI strategy is multifold. I mean, I think one is obviously a large part of our capital infrastructure has gone into AI build out in America. Ton of money, you know, billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars. And if you can kind of demonetize those and attack those through open competitors, I think it could have significant effects on our economy, and they're aware of that. I think the second piece is no one would trust hitting Chinese servers to use these things. A lot of people wouldn't trust, right? And you want, in these early stages, what you want is you want other people to build on top of your shit, right? You want GitHub to integrate your shit. You know, Microsoft, you want them to integrate your shit, build on top of it. You want large corporations to run their Slack through your shit and then get hooked on it, right? And there's a lot of people that rightfully would not hit Chinese servers to do that. So you need to open source it. And then I think the last piece is, even if they're not hosting this stuff, and a lot of times they are, right? Like if you want to hit the cheapest way of hitting Kimi, for instance, or GLM 5.2 or something, like you are hitting CCP servers. You're going to hit Chinese servers. They're going to host it for you. But you can also host it outside of them. But like they get to, if they get to build the intelligence, the quote unquote intelligence, the knowledge base, the source of truth that a bunch of society is built on top of, there's a lot of insidious shit you can do that's not censorship or surveillance. And the biggest example of it is, you know, it's the most obvious one to people is like you ask one of these Chinese models, what happened at Tiananmen Square? And they're like, oh, well, absolutely nothing happened. It's a beautiful square and you should go visit, you know? CCP is the best government on earth. So there's many reasons why they would do it. And I think a lot of those reasons are also reasons why like the US should foster it in a big way. But there's just so much money behind, as you said, this regulatory moat strategy that clearly most of these companies seem to be pushing in that route, pushing that way. Specifically Anthropic it's like their main strategy, is to scare and then get a regulatory moat. You know, Anthropic is also weird too, right? Cause they're run by Effective Altruists, which is basically a cult. It's the same cult SBF was a part of. Yep. And they like literally think they're making God. Like that's who these people are. And so they very much want full KYC on their own models, and they want to know how everyone's using it because they look down on you. They think that they need to be paternalistic and they need to gatekeep everything you do with what they build. But they know right now if they do that, if they go past what they're currently doing, which is phone number based and credit card based, which is still pretty bad, but it could get a lot worse. If they go past that, they need their competitors to also do it. Otherwise, people are just going to switch. It'll be too much friction. So that's part of the strategy for sure. You can see it happening in real time.
Yeah. I mean, even just the what they're pulling back, what was it, Fable?
Yeah.
You know, and saying like, oh, we can't let foreign nationals have this. And it's like, well, how are we going to determine effectively who's a foreign national? Like, I guess everyone's just going to have to upload their government ID and, you know, home address. And, you know,
I mean, Sam has the best. He's got WorldCoin. You can just scan your eyeballs before you access it.
But it's just proof of humanness. That's all it is. It's just he's just trying to make the world a better place. That's why they went and deployed this in third world countries using super, super sketchy tactics. Like it's just for the good of humanity, for the greater good, Odell, just for the greater good. Like, I don't know, some of this stuff is just so on the nose, though. Like the WorldCoin thing, they're still doing that, right? They rebranded it, though. It's like, no, but
I don't think they rebranded it, did they?
I thought they did a rebrand. Hold on. Let me check on that. I thought they simplified the name. Now it's just called World or World Network, which is just go. Like...
Coins are bad. Like, people don't like coins right now.
Yeah, you know, drop the coin. Just World. It's cleaner. And yeah. I mean, it's just all so creepy. And I guess where I'm at right now is because of like doing this show and, you know, listening to, you know, your shows and all the getting my 40 hours per week as much as I can, although I've been more on sci-fi audiobooks lately. I am very bullish on humanity. I'm very optimistic about the future. I'm now friends with people who are building incredible things that are very much innate. Enable resistance against the panopticon that is currently being built and is very much getting scarier by the day. So I'm very optimistic. At the same time, it's like, this goes back to what we said earlier about, you know, it's a few people that end up really moving the needle, changing the world, right? But there's also security in numbers from like an anonymity set perspective, right? And just like you do need more people using these freedom tech tools. Otherwise it gets a little bit easier to figure out the people that are using it because there's just so few people. It's like, you know, the problem with Zcash and Monero, for example. Right. I mean, one of many. Where are you at right now in terms of optimism versus pessimism on where humanity is going from a panopticon versus freedom tech perspective? Like, are the tools, is the fact that it is easier to encrypt than decrypt, is that fact alone enough for us? Or, you know, should we be more concerned than perhaps a lot of people are?
I mean, I think I'm strictly an optimist. I think some people might disagree with me, and I'm very hopeful. And I think, I mean, we're both relatively new fathers, right? And I think you have a kid, you start to think in generations, right? It's very much true. And think about their future and think about making sure their future is better than our current present. And I'm optimistic on that path. And you kind of have to be, right? Otherwise, it's like you kind of just go through a doom loop spiral that just will result in doom, I think. But I think it's important to like set expectations appropriately, right? And this goes to my missed expectations of the Nostr build out in a lot of ways, Nostr adoption. And Bitcoin adoption, to be honest. You know, when I was a younger, wide-eyed Bitcoiner, I thought everyone was going to be using Bitcoin as freedom money within 10 years or so. And that was over 10 years ago.
I found some old articles by you, by the way, some very old ones. I won't disclose them here. But I found
people can find them.
Good.
There's also
Google exists. But like I was just like, wow, you've come so far. You look better with facial hair now, too. I'll say. You know,
that one cursed photo from like 15 years ago that all the haters use against me. It's important to set expectations, right? So I think, first of all, the ride or dies are what give me hope. And you should be taking like at least a portion of your time, a significant portion of your time, focused on the ride or dies and enabling other ride or dies to empower themselves. And I think that will make significant scalable change. Because one man can't do it alone, right? But if you empower 10 or 100 and then those 10 or 100 empower another 10 or 100, like that's significant and it compounds on top of each other. I think the second piece, like I said earlier, is meeting people where they're at and having pragmatic trade-off balances and trying not to battle network effect. And I thought of another example while that's tangential to Bitcoin is like Tor, right? Like the Tor browser, you're strictly better from a privacy point of view if everyone's using Onion addresses. But way less people would use Tor browser if you couldn't also access the ClearNet on it and just type in a website. And that's a perfect example, I think, of a pragmatic trade-off balance that was made, even though you have worse privacy and security guarantees if you are accessing ClearNet through Tor browser. So there's that piece, focusing on the ride or dies, that piece. But then the third piece is like expectations. Like what does success of Bitcoin as freedom money look like? It's not more than 5% of the population. Like that's what it is. Maybe in 100 years that we could blow that number out and like the death of fiat or whatever. But I think even in that situation, people will be using Bitcoin in controlled and surveilled ways. So if that's the expectation, then you can actually build realistically towards it. And what I mean there, I mean, I think as a hopeful, optimistic person, the way to think about it is in 20 years, 30 years, the overwhelming majority of people will be living in a more dystopia type of situation. But there'll be 5% of us that are living in a more positive, freedom-oriented way. And I think focusing on that is key to mental health, because otherwise you get lost in this bullshit. You get lost in these bullshit expectations. And there's a lot of people that want you to get lost in them, right? Because from like an influencer point of view, saying that everyone will be free, saying that you don't have to take personal responsibility, saying that you don't have to put in any work whatsoever and your life will be better, sells way better. That's saying that some people, you need to take the harder path. Like you want to have a better life, you need to take the harder path and you will be rewarded for it.
This just makes me think also in terms of, because I agree with you on those percentages as well. And maybe those are even more I think those are optimist, like 5% is an optimistic
very high
percent. Like it's that, yeah. Like that's your optimist is showing, but that's a good thing, right? It's better to aim for the stars and fall amongst the treetops. But I'm curious from that adoption perspective, we touched earlier just briefly on sort of the insudification of Bitcoin. Now who's trapped in the room with whom it remains to be seen. And kind of want to get into that a little bit, but also from the store of value versus medium of exchange perspective, like this is something that is, this debate's been around obviously for a lot longer than I've been in Bitcoin. I haven't been in Bitcoin that long. I'm getting there now. You know, few years, people be like, you know, you're an OG if you got in the 2020s. You know, like it's all relative, right? But personally, I try to use Bitcoin as a medium of exchange as much as I can. Like I use it every day on Nostr just to zap value for value. I also try to spend it online whenever I have the option. I try to spend it in person whenever I have the option. It's easy at conferences, harder in day-to-day life, but like I go to Steak and Shake a lot since they've got tallow fries and grass-fed beef, and I spend Bitcoin when I go there, and I'm really happy to do that. And yes, guys, I replace it right away. Don't worry. But there's a lot of folks who seem to be under the impression that medium of exchange adoption is actually not like that just saving in Bitcoin is enough. Saving in Bitcoin is using. And I agree that it's using. Like that's, yes, store value is one of the functions of it, right? Personally, I just think that if like people should make an effort, again, do what you want with your money, but you should make an effort to spend Bitcoin, and medium of exchange adoption is very much needed for Bitcoin to achieve what it needs to achieve. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is it's both. And it's always been both. It always will be both. Like good money should increase in purchasing power over time. So anyone who tells you like price doesn't matter, like price is one of the most important metrics. And then the second piece is you should be able to spend it without permission. Because if you can't spend your wealth without permission, you have no wealth. It's fundamentally an IOU. That's the key. Both are key aspects to what makes Bitcoin better money. Now, the question is on a level of urgency, is it urgent to try and fight that network effect and build, like try and just like bull rush Bitcoin as a payment method? And I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I think it kind of just comes with time. I mean, look, through the years, more and more of my savings has become Bitcoin, right? And to the point where I'm pretty much 100% Bitcoin, right? Like I have like a small float in dollars because I'm running a family and businesses and shit. And I, you know, dollars are what people accept in most places. Can't pay my mortgage with Bitcoin yet. But as a result, like I prefer to spend Bitcoin, like it skips a step. Otherwise I need to, otherwise I'm selling Bitcoin $2 and then spending the dollars somewhere, right? It flips the equation from, oh, I'm receiving dollars and then I need to convert it to Bitcoin and then spend. And when that's the case, like I see why people aren't doing it. So it's a little bit of a chicken and the egg situation. But yeah, I think, look, good money needs, you need to be able to spend and save it without permission. Both are valid use cases. Both are complementary to each other. But I would say, while I don't think there's necessarily the hugest level of urgency on trying to bull rush Bitcoin payments adoption when people aren't ready for it necessarily, we do need to be very careful of just like completely discarding it and being like, oh, people should just have Bitcoin in their Charles Schwab account and never be able to spend it. Because once again, then it's not your wealth and you're eroding one of the key properties of Bitcoin. And you're not expanding the actual base of people that are holding real Bitcoin as freedom money, which is key. It's like this remnant base that keeps the system in check in a lot of ways, right? Like the cool part about Bitcoin is that no one can change it easily. Like that's one of the core fundamental values. And a hard to measure property of that, I think, is a wide distributed base of people holding and using real Bitcoin, using their own nodes, holding their own keys, spending it without permission. And so like we have to be very careful that, I think we do have to be careful that that percentage of those people in the entire system isn't negligible, right? It's already small, to be clear. Like it's definitely more people are using custodial stuff, specifically suit custodial stuff like ETFs and MSTR and the clones and whatnot. But on the bright side, the absolute number of people using Bitcoin as freedom money and building on top of Bitcoin as freedom money has never been higher, like from an absolute number. So if that started trending down, that I think would be a concern in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with all that. Maybe just an add-on, and somebody sort of posed this in the chat on Nostr saying, why would we not lose store of value if we lose that medium of exchange? And I think that kind of to maybe expand on that question a little bit would be, if Bitcoin isn't widely used as a medium of exchange, if it is just, people may say, hey, it's enough that it's finite, it's a perfect store of value, it's digital capital, that's perfect, it's all it needs to be. But if Bitcoin loses one of its, the ability to exercise one of its core properties, which is spend it however the fuck you want to anyone at any time and no one can stop you, like, that obviously negates some of the huge part of the value of Bitcoin. Yeah. As you said, if you can't spend your wealth, you don't have anything. Yeah. It's an extreme. It's an extreme.
Yeah. That's the problem. Like, a lot of these things, you get lost in these debates over extremes.
Yeah.
When it's somewhere in the middle, and that's where we need it to be, somewhere in the middle. And that's where it's healthy, is somewhere in the middle. I mean, an interesting thought experiment. I mean, this will be less relevant to, I guess I didn't ask you. I assume this is also getting released to podcast apps and stuff afterwards, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. All like the centralized platforms and my RSS feed, which, less centralized.
RSS is great. So then
awesome.
For the Nostr ride or dies, right? Like, I'd pose a question to you guys. Like, I am probably one of the largest zappers in the world. I've been kind of disappointed on lack of zaps. Like, I just don't, like, people, you have the capability. It's never been easier. Like, in one click, you can send freedom money to anyone in the world. And we're sending like 10 cents to each other. It's kind of wild.
10 cents,
right?
Like, would be, I think, a big zap, honestly, these days.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, like, it's been bullish seeing all the freedom money fly around. But also, it's like kind of disappointing. Like, there's been so many, I've seen conspiracies that are like, oh, Odell's always the top zap on like all the trending posts. It's like, yeah, well, the top zap is a dollar. Like, why don't you send more? Like, why don't you send more money? And I think that's a good example. Like, I'm juicing your zaps for you. You're welcome.
I know. Yeah. Just send them, guys. Prove you're not a fraud.
But I think that's a good example, right? Where you're like, you can have the tools, you can have everything set up, you can have the capability, right? But you can't force people to do something. And so if that's your expectation, you're going to be upset. You're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I have not zapped less than 696 sats. That's my default zap is 696. It only goes up from there. I also checked the metrics. It's like, I have zapped much more than I have been zapped. And that is like a purposeful thing, right? Like,
yeah, I've never spent more money on a free app in my life. Like, I don't, it's like $7,000 net down on zaps right now or something.
Yeah. But like, it is a really incredible thing to be able to do this, right? And to have that social coordination layer, to have the Venmo aspect, but like without the really like lame feed in Venmo that's just like, Harry bought a cheeseburger from Bob. It's like that. The Venmo feed was always a little creepy to me. The Nostr one less so. I don't know. Again, people, do whatever you want with your money. It's one of those things where I'm not on Nostr because I think I'm going to get rich off zaps, right? I'm on Nostr and I'm zapping because I find things really valuable. And like, especially devs, like, I want to zap devs when I see, even if it's not a tool that I personally use, like maybe it's an Android app and I'm a, an iPhone guy. I'm still going to zap it when I see them putting out a new release, because like that's awesome. We need more of that. I think that's been one of the interesting things too, from a creator perspective. I think Paul at Primal has been doing a killer job of bringing just some good creator vibes to the platform. To the protocol. But I am curious if we start to see more creators come in, and how much of that is a function of, I don't think it's going to be a function of like revenue at the start. Like, I think that's what we all, like even myself, like tried to pitch, like, look, you can get zapped Bitcoin. And it's like, oh, thanks. 45 cents. Like that's great. YouTube pays me, not me, but some big creator, like a lot more money than that. But I do think that there's a lot of tools coming out. Even like Divine, I think is really cool. Like, I loved Vine back in the day. That's just like a really fun app that doesn't need to be billed as like a Nostr client, right? It's just like, it's like Vine, but it's new. And yeah, it happens to be built on this new open protocol, but like, you don't care. You just want to watch short form videos that are actually made by humans. Like, I love seeing that kind of stuff, because I think that stuff, even just looking at how the beta filled up like that stuff moves the needle from an adoption perspective. How many people actually stick around, like, that remains to be seen. But I'm curious if there are other things similar to Divine or kind of other within the social context, but either rebuilding some existing thing like Divine, or, you know, rebuilding that idea, or creating something new that you're super bullish on beyond just like short form blog, X Twitter clones.
Yeah, I don't know. First and foremost, to be discussed in the Nostr chat has asked, I think, 3 times now.
Okay.
Memory system that Marty shills about using with his LLM, with his agent. I don't know. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Tag Marty.
I do not use it. I know Marty talks about it on X a lot. So you can check his X feed. Anyway, I don't know, man. I'm at a loss, to be honest. I do not think it's money related that's going to do it. I think it's a nice to have. It's a benefit that we can just send freedom money with Zaps. I think if you want to make the most money, like, it's just a huge gap. If you do slop on corporate social and feed the algo, things like, you know, on YouTube, you get deprioritized from the algo if you don't let them insert their own advertising into your shit. And it's really bad. Their advertising is really bad. So people aren't even doing that to get money from YouTube. They're just doing it because they want the algo to boost them, and then they make money separately from their own ads or whatnot. It's hard to imagine that people are going to make more money from donations. I think where value for value is really helpful is, one, on censored creators. They don't have other avenues. You know, there's no other option. There's Bitcoin and Nostr. And then the second piece is like small new people, right? It's like, oh, you start a new podcast. Maybe you make $100, $200 an episode. Like, that's substantial. Like, you can't make that from the corporate socials. And then the other piece is, actually, paywalls are very effective and have been very, like, there's Substack creators that are making millions of dollars a year on paywall newsletters. It's hard to imagine donations coming close to that. So I don't think it's the money piece. I think Divine's kind of interesting. I'm very grateful Rabble's building on Nostr. I think it's probably a little bit overhyped, to be honest, and we'll see what kind of staying power is there. Look, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, like, the tools on Nostr just have not been stable. Like, we just haven't been stable. It's only relatively recently, like the last 6 months, 12 months, where there's multiple apps that work pretty well, that, you know, aren't like immediately showing you dick pics when you sign in, you know, that are like are tangibly usable. And so that's the first step. And then I think, you know, people will come for like the freedom and truth piece. And it, unfortunately, I think, like, you need to see the alternatives basically get significantly worse because of societal pressure and incentive pressure and corporate pressure. Things like we said, like the ID verification, stuff like that. But by the way, like, Nostr doesn't even solve all those aspects, right? Like, when we saw Brazil crackdown, I remember on X, and it was specifically like anti-government people or anti the current regime people. Like, they made a law that said you just couldn't post. And so those people would have to start the web of trust from square one with an Anon account. Like, they couldn't just like post as the influencer themselves. They couldn't be like, then they'd just get their house raided, right? Like, there's outside of protocol ways of enforcing restrictions on digital speech that can be leveraged against people that Nostr doesn't solve. Now, what is interesting is group chats could solve that. Or help, right? Encrypted group chats. And I think we're very fortunate that we have Signal available to us. I run a ton of my personal and business life through Signal at this point. Like, 99% of my comms are going through Signal. But it's centralized and completely vulnerable to government pressure. And so I don't think we should just assume that'll always be the status quo. And so it'd be nice to see a Noster-based alternative to it. I know the White Noise guys are working on it. Yeah, I know they're also having a lot of difficulty, so I don't want to overhype it. I think it's an open question whether or not Noster would be the ideal protocol for this type of stuff. Obviously, SimpleX has been working on it for a while. I don't really care what the protocol is, but there needs to be a robust, non-centralized alternative to Signal that works as well as Signal. Like my 90-plus-year-old grandmother uses Signal because that's how she gets baby photos. That's awesome. We got to meet people where they're at. And so I think that's increasingly something that is interesting to me is trying to improve that group chat mechanism, strong group chats, right? It's like strong local communities almost, but in the digital era.
And I think it's so much more important than a lot of people realize on the private communication front. Like we tend to think of free speech as being this thing that you must do in public in order for it to be effective. But in reality, it's like private speech is just as important, potentially more so, because it is the last line of defense. It's also the way that, you know, people have been subverting the state since time immemorial. Like
in,
right?
Pubs with the windows closed.
Exactly. Which is why one of the things, I was just talking with Max Hillebrand about this the other day. One of the things that's so crazy to me is that there isn't more pushback, just widespread pushback, even from non-techie people, on governments trying to get back doors, like what the UK has been trying to do, will continue to try to do, what every government tries to do, get back doors into encrypted messaging services, right? And just because it's like, what you're effectively asking is, I want to come into your living room, or I want to come into your booth in the pub and listen to everything you say and be able to get you in trouble for anything you say to your friend in that private room in the pub. Like in the meat space, that would be so untenable. I mean, but we're also getting close to there, right? Just with the prevalence of cameras, everything's listening to you all the time. But even so, it's like people completely, they somehow view the digital space as like, well, that's not quite as important, or that's not quite as maybe like visceral. I don't know what it is. There's not even a question there. It's more so just like, I wish people were more up in arms about that, because it is an insane violation, right? Yeah, yeah.
I think that's why you have to just ground yourself in reality, because most people just don't give a shit or won't take the next step. By the way, to be discussed, because you're the top zapper to Walker, and you said you deleted your ex, I went on to Marty's ex account, I searched memory, and he is using something called QMD. Plus Cogni, Cogne. So you're welcome. And to everyone else out there, if you zap more than him and you ask a question, I'm obligated to answer it. I have to answer the question. So just keep that in mind. And I don't get any of the zaps. They're only going to Walker. I just want to see the freedom money.
Might have to funnel some your way now. Out of, I forget if the splits are a great thing.
But that's another thing that's like, on here. It's they're not, and it's complicated to implement. And then it's like a perfect example of like in the real world, people can just, when the show ends, send the person their half. Programmatic splits are awesome. I mean, one of the cool things is OpenSats. We have a Lightning address and a node pub key because we run our own node. So like a bunch of podcasting 2.0 streams just auto split to us, which is pretty fucking cool. So I think that's, I'm not like trying to like completely diminish splits, I think it's another example of like, it's another example of we get too far into the weeds of things, just because it's technically possible. It doesn't mean it should necessarily be the highest priority thing. When like humans have figured out, you know, non-technical ways to solve this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Like much, much more simply. Like, hey, and especially on Noster, it's like, I don't even need to ask your Lightning address. I can just be like, boop. Or, you know, any zaps that go to the stream, go to OpenSats. How about that, guys? For anyone listening, they will go to OpenSats. So if you zap, you are zapping me, and I am the middleman. But luckily, you guys can verify exactly and make sure that I sent every last sat.
Well, I don't know that they could actually verify it, but we trust you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll post a screenshot or something.
You need to have some level of trust in society. You can't like remove all trust from society. Like that's one of the reasons why strong local communities are so awesome. It's because they're high trust societies. I think it's important that we have trust minimized tech, but also I think people get stuck in it a little bit. There needs to be some level of trust.
Do you think we're seeing now, or we'll start to see more of a resurgence in like small, local, decentralized
community,
like at least in America? Like it feels like we are. Is that your vibe as well?
Yeah. And I mean, I think, to not glaze Elon too much, like the fact that Starlink exists is fucking huge. It really opens up the potential of where you can live and raise your family and gives people effectively more freedom of movement, right, over which jurisdictions they want to be in. And I think in America specifically, we could go back and forth on whether or not voting is rigged in America. One of the issues is it's impossible to verify. But the real vote that is not rigged, that is actually substantial and tangible, is voting with your feet and moving. And it's really, really, it's not really easy. It's hard. Moving is hard. Moving is fucking difficult. Especially if you're leaving friends and family, but moving with your feet and choosing a different jurisdiction is like one of the single best parts of America and makes this country great. And I think a lot of people are questioning themselves, like, do I want to raise my family in a city or near a city? Do I want to go to a smaller community where I know my neighbors, where I can, like, I'm not just shaking my farmer's hand, like my farmer is my neighbor and I have chickens and I have a garden and I can be self-sufficient. I think that's much more robust. And I think if you want to take the optimistic path, technology enables freedom technology just doesn't empower the individuals. It also empowers these small communities in a big way because it empowers the individuals. Like you can imagine situations where small communities are basically able to interact with global trade for things they need. When that wasn't possible before the internet, before digitally native freedom money like Bitcoin, before things like drones or 3D printing and local AI and whatnot. So there could be some really interesting aspects there. You mentioned sci-fi. One of my favorite books is Damon by Daniel Suarez. I think he wrote it in 2009. He wrote it a long time ago. I read it a long time ago. I read it before Bitcoin, before Nostr. Then he has a sequel, Freedom, and without any spoilers, he never mentions Bitcoin or Nostr. But like Bitcoin, Nostr, open source AI is basically, he sets up the template for strong local communities operating using those technologies. And that's probably one of my most optimistic timelines that we could go down.
On the self-hosted piece, I'm gonna check that. I have not read that. I have to go down that
Daniel Suarez.
Hole. Daniel Suarez. Okay, nice. I've been recently, I went through all of the Dungeon Crawler Carl audiobooks. It's pretty incredible. It sounds really weird if you haven't heard of it. Lynn Alden recommended it to me. So I knew it was going to be good, but I didn't realize how good. And then I've been on more recently. Well, Lynn, shout out to Lynn for her book, which Carl and I narrated, The Stolgard Instant.
Listen
or read either way.
I don't do audiobooks. I'm old fashioned.
Really?
I like reading.
Okay.
But the fact that you and Carla, the fact that one friend wrote the book and then two other friends narrated the book kind of makes me want to listen to the audiobook.
Give it a shot.
Just for the vibes alone.
Well, you know, what I love about sci-fi and Lynn does this very well, because it's like it's near future sci-fi, you know, like it's not so, we're not talking thousands
or
hundreds
of
years. Exactly. Yeah. It's like, so it feels more real. Like it feels like something you could see in your lifetime. And I find sci-fi to be such an interesting, like how much of actual science ends up kind of almost being led by science fiction in some ways. Like some author wrote about something in the 1960s and, you know, somebody like Elon Musk is like, well, that sounds like a cool idea. Let's do that. You know, like it's just, it's amazing to see that kind of stuff come to fruition in reality. But yeah, I'll have to check that out. I wanted to ask you though, on the self-hosted side, because you mentioned this when we were on the BitCast stream. I think you mentioned something about your stack. You want to talk about that a little bit, just in terms of, I think you mentioned you have a Start 9. You've got like a whole, basically entirely self-hosted stack, both for comms. I think you said you were running local LLMs as well. Is that correct? And like some other things. I mean, you're obviously running a Bitcoin node. That's a given. But can you talk about that a little bit?
So it's interesting, right? So like if you like go back on my journey, when I was much younger. We had the financial collapse in 2008, which was like, okay, you can't trust the bankers. And like, you can't trust any of the talking heads. You know, like everyone said, like, I mean, people that were paying attention, sure, like, you know, everyone thinks they're in The Big Short and that they can see things ahead of time. But most of the talking heads were caught completely off guard. Everyone pretends they're adults in the room, had no fucking idea. So I was like, you can't trust the financial system. So it was like piece number one that set up my Bitcoin journey. But I was like, you can trust the big tech companies. And Snowden came out in 2013 and was like, you can't trust the big tech companies. They're all complicit. I was like, fuck. I was like, so where is hope? And so hope is open source software and hardware and technology, right? Empowering individuals to not have to trust a centralized third party. That's where hope is. And since then, I've focused most of my life's mission on accelerating that movement. And I strongly believe there's two pieces there. I think there's stuff that is in the commons that is like almost impossible to monetize. And that's why OpenSats exists. Let's accelerate that. But I'm still a capitalist, and I think capitalism scales the best. And part of the reason why I even strongly believe that even more strongly now is because I'm the main person raising money for OpenSats, and I make no money from it. And it's a pain in the fucking ass, and it's not sustainable. It's very difficult to do. Like, it's not an easy thing to do. OpenSats has received thousands of applications every year. So there's a bunch of people that don't like me because applications have been denied, even though we've approved over 400. And I say to all those people, it's like, okay, well, if you have your pet project that you wish is funded, like, go raise money for that. And you'll see how difficult it is. And you'll see how difficult that path is. And even though OpenSats has been incredibly successful and we're sending out $1 million worth of Bitcoin every month, it pales in comparison to the amount of capital that we've been able to tap on the 1031 side with investment for profit capital. And the reason I say this is a very long-winded is why we're the largest investor in Start9. Most investors won't touch something that's an open source stack. Like, you can use Start9's entire stack without paying them a dime by just flashing it onto any old computer. Most investors look at that and be like, you're retarded. That's horrible. There's no way we're going to be able to make money off of that. But the dream is there. Like, if you can have profitable open source businesses, they never have to raise donation funding again. They can scale like crazy, right? And they can compound on top of each other. So that's why we're investors in Start9. That's why I'm a user in Start9. And so I do run a Start9 server at home, which ironically, by the way, I didn't buy their hardware. Their hardware is fantastic and is actually extremely well priced now because Matt Hill, the co-founder of Start9, sold a bunch of Bitcoin at the top and bought RAM with it, which was a great trade. So his great trade is kind of subsidizing the price. So you actually get a pretty good deal right now if you buy their hardware. But I just flashed it on an old Linux computer I have. So I'm running that, and they're coming out with a router. And so I'm beta testing their router. It's right now it's Bitcoin only pre-order. You can find it at router.start9.com. And I'm like preemptively testing it before public release in the summer. And that is running a nearly fully open hardware stack with open source software on it, and then lets you easily run WireGuard VPNs on it and different profiles on it. So like right now, this stream is running through that router. It's running through Starlink. And then from Starlink, it's running to that router. And then on that router, it's running through Obscura VPN, which you can pay for with Bitcoin. So that's two hops of VPN. So one hop is Obscura, the other hop is Movad, and then it's coming to you guys. And it works really well. Like everything in my home is running through this thing. On the open source AI side, and to be clear, there's still caveats. Like I was recording RHR the other day live, and one of Obscura's VPN servers went offline, and I got cut from the stream, and I had to fix it and rejoin. But anyway, still pretty great. On the open source LLM side, look, I think the only reason to really do it is to improve your skill. At this point, is to improve your skills. It's definitely not to save money, and it's for the freedom focus elements. Because things are accelerating quickly. Anything you can self-host is much less powerful than the stuff that is hosted. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the same path with like ASICs kind of come out and stuff. So I think a lot of this hardware could become obsolete. Like, you end up paying like $10,000 for hardware that become like more or less obsolete, not completely obsolete, like Bitcoin mining hardware, but that you wish you maybe had to spend the $10,000 if you're trying to do it to save money. And I think the single best way to play around with these things right now, especially if cost is an issue, is to do use stuff like PPQ.ai, where you pay with Bitcoin and you can pick any model out there. The open source models, some are encrypted and secure enclaves on, you know, on T's in the cloud. So you have some stronger privacy guarantees. You can also use all the top tier models. And then in that situation, it's kind of like a VPN level of privacy. It's like a proxy privacy. And it allows you to flip and move between them very easily. There's other options. OpenRouter exists, but they only accept dollars or USDC. Venice exists, which has way more users than PPQ and also accepts Bitcoin, but also has a shitcoin attached to it that isn't necessary, but you might not want to use it just for that reason. But those that idea of being able to switch on the fly between any model that's available, I think, is very empowering to people right now. And it doesn't lock you in. And the worst position you can be in, I think, right now, is like you move your small business over to like a fully integrated Claude stack where you're using like all their proprietary software and everything. And then Claude pulls the plug and your whole system grinds to a halt. If you're using something like PPQ, or local models, you can switch on the fly and you can, well, with local models, it's like you just can't get cut off, which is fucking awesome and empowering. Yeah. But with something like PPQ, you can just, Claude cuts you off, you can switch to ChatGPT. ChatGPT cuts you off, you can switch to GLM, you know? And you can just keep moving on the fly and not be beholden to someone else and get stuck in that vendor lock-in. Because a lot of people are going to get stuck in the vendor lock-in, just like we saw with the last phase of big tech where you're stuck in, you know, G Suite or something and you can't move easily.
And like, this isn't theoretical either. Again, we mentioned this earlier, but it's like Anthropic just pulled the plug instantly. You know, for like it's trivial for them. It's not, and they don't have to ask anyone. You have to ask for their permission. They do not have to ask for yours. So it's like, I think that lock in piece is really important.
The perfect example there, by the way, is, so I've always found like learning by doing is the best way. And you know, to each their own, maybe other people aren't that case. So I built a full AI news desk, called CitadelWire.com. And it's run by three different AI agents, they're all running top tier models. And when Anthropic pulled the plug, the top editor was running Fable. And I saw that they pulled the plug and I went to check on it to make sure it was still working. And it just had auto, I had already set it up in a way that it just auto switched to GPT-5.5. So there was literally zero downtime and I actually didn't. It was good that I was paying attention, but also it didn't matter that I was paying attention because the system was set up in a way that it didn't have a central point of failure there.
I mean, that's huge. I did see, I've not checked it out yet, but I did see you post about it. I think I saw you post about it on X actually. But you know, I'm not going to hold it against
you. I posted about it on Nostr a lot of times.
I know. I'm just giving you shit.
And it actually uses Nostr natively to split up. Like the agents post the news to Nostr, and then I have a centralized website that's effectively a Nostr app. And I think that's a cool piece, by the way, on the Nostr point, is that you're going to see like a bunch of purpose-built, very niche Nostr apps. Like in this case, it's literally just a Nostr app to read a single Nostr NPub. Like that's all it does. You don't even sign in. Like no sign-in required. You're literally just going to the website. And you're viewing a Nostr account. You don't even know you're viewing a Nostr account unless you know what you're watching. And as a result, everything's hashed and signed and stored on multiple relays, right?
Pretty cool. It is huge. And I wonder how much of that is going to be what we see. I agree with your point earlier. And I think that was actually, I haven't heard it phrased that way, that the social layer is actually huge. Like it's not just a frivolity or like just a fun thing to have, that it's actually very crucial in terms of enabling some of those other use cases. Like you can't have the web of trust without the social layer. Like it's literally not possible. So I think that's good framing there. But I do wonder how much of this stuff ends up being just, hey, we're like BitChat. You know, people don't need to know that it's like now is using Nostr in various ways to.
But see, like BitChat's an interesting. right? BitChat's an interesting one, right? Because it's a noble it's a project that has a mission that I love, right? Which is censorship resistant, robust communications, mesh nets. It's something that's super cool that people have struggled to exist and make network effect and whatnot. But, and it's a great case study of how easy it is to build on Nostr. But it doesn't actually help Nostr in any way. And maybe that's a controversial opinion, but it, if anything, it's almost parasitic to Nostr. It's like using Nostr relays that people are running, not for BitChat. Like most of the people that the relays are using, that's not why they exist. And they're not building any, it's not adding to the network effect. It doesn't, because it's all disposable identities, which is great. They're building something completely different. But the fact that, you know, they have millions of BitChat users, it doesn't really translate to someone who's using Wisp in the way that if someone's using Wisp and you're using Nostr or Primal, like every new Wisp user benefits Nostr and Primal users. Every new BitChat user is almost completely irrelevant to them.
It's interesting. BitChat is like cypherpunk as hell, though. Like,
yeah, 100%.
You know, it's, you know, that I totally agree with the point there. It's like, But that was my larger point, that like there are, I think, going to be a lot of really cool things built that may not help, quote, Nostr adoption. I still say Nostr, by the way, because I say it correctly. But, you know, I'm not going to hold the Nostr thing against you. But they don't necessarily help. Don't necessarily help, like, the adoption from an awareness standpoint or even from a, like, social layer adoption standpoint. But use that protocol in such a way that it creates a really fantastic value add in whatever that other app is, like in the case of BitChat, right? Like, and that, like, that's just it's just fucking cool. Like, it's cool that Jack,
I guess,
built,
my
cool
point is
Cali ported
Nostr
over,
helps,
like,
Nostr helps BitChat, but BitChat doesn't really help Nostr.
That's
I
fair
guess is my
that's
point.
Fair and Jack and Cali, if you're listening to this, no, I'm kidding.
Jack and Cali have done plenty to help Nostr.
I know.
Absolutely clear. I just don't think BitChat
more than
one of them.
Yeah, more than the vast majority, that's for sure. But Odell, I've enjoyed this thoroughly, man. I appreciate your time very much. First of all, and thank you to everybody who joined in on Nostr. You're on zap.stream or wherever you're watching this, Primal or any of the other apps that support the live streaming function. Thank you, guys. Appreciate the zaps. They will all go to OpenSats after this, and there's a decent number of them. So appreciate you guys sending your hard-earned sats here. Odell, where do you want to send people? Anything you want to have them check out? Anything new on the docket for you?
Thanks for having me. This is fun. Been a long time coming. It's a pleasure.
I know.
And I don't know. I have my personal webpage is odell.xyz. It links to my Nostr account. It links to X. It links to all the projects I'm working on. OpenSats, 1031, Bitcoin Policy Institute, Bitcoin Park, Simple X Foundation now. So check all those out. And then check out CitadelWire.com. It's fun. It's a passion project. I built it for myself. I'm spending about $100 a day on that thing. I'm not trying to make a profit on it.
Damn.
But I want to cut through all the bullshit and not get stuck doom scrolling and stuff, but still be able to pay attention on what's relevant out there. So that's why that exists. And also I wanted to learn how these different AI tools work well together and try and make them stable and effective for improving my life and improving my productivity. So feedback is appreciated. I mean, an interesting thing, over 35,000 visitors have hit CitadelWire.com, which is pretty wild.
Really?
It might have better user retention than all the other Nostr apps, except for BitChat. but yeah, and it's such a simple thing.
Yeah, now I will take the time to go check it out. Thank you for building it and burning the tokens for the greater good. Appreciate your time. Thank you to everybody again in the for the zaps and for joining us here on Nostr. And if you're listening to this after the fact, it's because you're not on Nostr. So get on there. Even though Odell went back to X, that doesn't mean he's lost faith, guys. So the rumors are very overblown. Appreciate your time, dude. Good chatting.
Cheers.
All right, Mike. And that's a wrap on this Bitcoin Talk episode of the Bitcoin Podcast.
Remember to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're watching or listening, and share it with your friends, family, and strangers on the internet. Find me on Noster at primal.net/walker and this podcast at primal.net/titcoin. On X, YouTube, and Rumble, just search at Walker America. And find this podcast on X and Instagram at Titcoin Podcast. Head to the show notes to grab sponsor links. Head to substack.com/@WalkerAmerica to get episodes emailed to you. And head to bitcoinpodcast.net for everything else. Bitcoin is scarce, but podcasts are abundant. So thank you for spending your scarce time listening to the Bitcoin Podcast. Until next time, stay free.